is Weekly Dose of Wellness, brought to you by Memorial Care Health System. Here's Deborah Howell.
Welcome to the show. This is your Weekly Dose of Wellness. I am Deborah Howell, and today our guest is Dr. Ramez Eskander, Assistant Clinical Professor of Gynecologic Oncology at UC Irvine, also a cervical cancer specialist with Saddleback Memorial Medical Center. Cervical cancer is one of the most common cancers in women worldwide, and today we'll discuss robotic-assisted surgical treatment options and the benefits of this minimally invasive approach for patients. Welcome, Dr. Eskander.
Thank you for having me.
If a woman is diagnosed with cancer of the cervix, what treatment options are available for her?
Treatment largely depends on stage and when the cancer is diagnosed. So if the cancer is localized and limited to the cervix, depending on how large the lesion is, you can have a less invasive, straightforward hysterectomy, or what we call a radical hysterectomy. In more advanced stages of disease, we treat with radiation and chemotherapy.
Well, that's pretty straightforward. I'm sure each case is different, but if you could tell us a little bit more about the very exciting robotic-assisted surgery for the treatment of cervical cancer, I'd be really, really happy about that.
Absolutely. So robotic surgery essentially transformed how we treat cervical cancer. Not too long ago, radical hysterectomies were surgeries that took 4, 5, or 6 hours and were associated with significant blood loss. And now we've transformed that to a surgery that takes 2 to 3 hours and allows patients to go home the next day with a significant reduction in length of stay, pain, and post-operative complications. And robotic surgery is unique because it's done through 4 or 5 small incisions and facilitates our ability to really do the same surgery that we used to do through a much larger midline abdominal incision.
You're the first physician I've spoken to that has mentioned blood loss for traditional surgery. Tell me a little bit more about that.
With radical hysterectomies, you have to develop very complex pelvic spaces. And with open surgeries that used to be conducted, there was an associated greater blood loss. And now with robotic surgery and the technology that robotic surgery brings, we're able to do the same procedures with a reduction in that blood loss and often a reduction in the operative time as well.
Those are some advantages. Are there any other advantages for patients?
Certainly, recovery is also a lot quicker. And in patients who may be obese or have diabetes, there's a decrease in wound infection rates and wound complications.
Can't beat that. Because
No, absolutely not. It's really transformed the way we treat patients with gynecologic cancers, specifically cervical and endometrial cancers.
And not to mention, recovery time is reduced by so much that people can go back to driving and they can get back to work and they can get back to exercising so much faster than with traditional surgery.
Correct. And a lot of patients have obligations to their families. Unfortunately, cervical cancer affects young women, many of whom are mothers, and they have children, family obligations, and work obligations, as you mentioned. And the robotic approach allows them to have the operation and heal and get back to the other things that are obviously important in their lives that require their time and their effort.
So obviously every woman would want this, but how do you determine if the robotic-assisted approach is appropriate for any patient?
It depends on the clinical stage. Cervical cancer is unique in that it's staged clinically before we operate on patients, and that's really dependent on a pelvic examination that's done in the office, and additionally a repeat examination when a patient is under anesthesia. And we also employ imaging modalities. If the cancer appears to be localized to the cervix and is traditionally less than about 4 centimeters in size, those patients are counseled about the options for a robotic approach for the treatment of their cancer.
So it's location and size.
Correct.
Okay. And what about aftercare post-surgery?
Patients are usually in the hospital one night. The next day they are discharged home because of the radicality of the surgery. Sometimes they do go home with a catheter draining the bladder, but that comes out in the office about 3 to 7 days after surgery is completed and they're discharged home. But ultimately, when they go home, we instruct them to resume activity as tolerated, no strenuous exercise, certainly no heavy lifting, as the surgery they had on the inside is a lot bigger than the 5 small incisions that they see on the outside.
Yes. Wow. Well, it's a new day when you can only have to stay one night in the hospital and have a procedure of this type.
Correct.
When can a when can a woman start exercising again after this type of surgery?
We usually recommend that they wait about 4 to 6 weeks. before resuming a strenuous exercise.
All right, strenuous meaning yoga and...
Exactly, engaging their core muscles, really.
Aerobics and such, and certainly spinning.
That's exactly right, yes.
What are some of the causes and risks for cervical cancer?
Cervical cancer is HPV-related, and the risks associated with cervical cancer are really things that increase exposure to HPV, so early onset, intercourse, multiple partners, previous exposure to HPV, history of cervical dysplasia. Those are all risk factors that subsequently can lead to the development of cervical cancer. We know the majority of women clear HPV infections because approximately 80% will be exposed at some point in their life, but unfortunately, a subset of patients who do develop HPV-related infections and dysplasia go on to develop cervical cancer, and we're still trying to learn why that happens in some women and not others.
Okay. And what about screening methods to detect cervical cancer early?
Screening is critical, and currently we employ a combination of HPV testing and Pap smear, which is cytology. We're learning more and more about the importance of HPV, and newer algorithms and clinical trials are reporting that potentially we can do HPV testing alone, which is still a assessment off of the cervix, so it's not a blood draw, for example, that would potentially change the cumbersome nature of the pelvic exam. But with HPV screening and primary HPV screening, potentially we're looking to transform the paradigm of cervical cancer screening.
And who should get screening?
All women should be screened. The age at which screening starts varies, and that really depends. We used to recommend that screening begin 3 years after women become sexually active. Well, that's completely changed because we realized we were over-treating young women, the majority of whom would clear their HPV infection. So now we don't do really any screening at all until at least age 21. And then subsequent to that, we don't do any HPV testing until women are about 30 years of age because the majority of women between age 20 and 30 will test positive for HPV.
Really?
But as mentioned, they will clear it.
Okay. All right. Is there a vaccine that can possibly prevent cervical cancer?
Yes. We have now three vaccines. There's a bivalent, which is a vaccine that targets two HPV strains. There's a quadrivalent, which targets four HPV strains, and now we have a brand new 9-valent, which targets 9 high-risk HPV strains, all of whom are linked to cervical cancer. And the vaccines have been shown to be incredibly effective for cervical cancer, vaginal cancers, vulvar cancers, and in men, penile cancer.
Wow. That truly is a breakthrough.
Yes, it's outstanding. It's important for us to realize how poor we are at getting individuals vaccinated, talking to them and informing them, because our vaccine uptake rate is poor in the United States. But with a vaccine that can essentially prevent these cancers, it's important that we continue to push to get vaccine rates higher.
And why are people reluctant to get vaccines?
It's complex. People have looked at it, tried to answer why. A lot of it is societal. There's a concern that vaccinating against a quote-unquote sexually transmitted disease promotes potential promiscuity, although that's not ever been validated. There's concern about vaccine side effects. As you know, recently in California, we had a measles outbreak because people were afraid about the potential side effects of the measles vaccine and elected to not vaccinate their children. So there are several factors that play into this, but certainly also education, patient education and family education is critical. And we as physicians and providers need to do a better job of talking to parents when their children are minors and talking to young women about the importance of the HPV vaccine, its clinical efficacy, its utility, and its importance.
Aside from speaking to their doctors, where can people go to get more information about vaccines?
Certainly any of the companies that offer the vaccine. Right now it's Merck, which offers the Gardasil and the quadrivalent. And there's also the Cervarix vaccine, which is the bivalent vaccine. Any of those companies' websites would have an extensive amount of information. Additionally, there's the American Society of Cervical Pathology and Colposcopy, ASCCP, and there's also information, an extensive amount of information for the public to go to that website and to learn about cervical cancer screening and vaccination and prevention.
Is it up to the patient or up to the doctor to decide which vaccine might be appropriate for which patient?
Now, we're actually moving towards the 9-valent. The 9-valent was just approved in the United States by the Food and Drug Administration a few months ago. And because it provides greater coverage with 9 HPV strains, it's the clinically preferred vaccine to use.
I see. Dr. Eskander, as always, so much. You're just a wealth of information. We really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate the time.
To learn more or to listen to a podcast of the show, please visit memorialcare.org. I'm Deborah Howell. Join us again next time as we explore another weekly dose of wellness, and have yourself a fantastic, healthy day.